welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And we are here tonight on the 31st of March, 2008. Tomorrow is April 1st, April Fool's Day, and boy, does that take me back. My mother used to play April Fool's jokes on us when we were little children. It is awful. No, it wasn't awful. It was funny, and it's part of what, or the reason I credit her with my sense of humor. She had a wonderful sense of humor. So get this. Here I am in the eighth grade. And what am I saying? I wasn't in the eighth grade. I was in the second grade, and I was six, well, that would be 7 years old, 1957, and I go to lunch with a lunch pail. Of course, back then we didn't take brown paper bags yet. And I go to lunch with a lunch pail, and I get to pull out my lunch, and I've got no thermos in the lunch pail. There's a flashlight in there that feels and sounds like the thermos. I've got no apple. I've got a potato for dessert, and I've got no sandwich. I forget what was in place of the sandwich. But there was a note from Mom that said, "Dear Andy, April Fool's Day, exclamation point, go to Grandma's for lunch, love Mom." And I go up and show my teacher the note, and she says, "Go ahead." So I leave the school, I walk three doors down the street to my grandmother's house, and there are my other brothers and sisters from the other grades. There were five of us in grammar school that year, and Mom is there in Grandma's kitchen spreading sandwiches like she usually does at 7 in the morning, but this day she's making them for us over at Grandma's for April Fool's Day, and she's got this twinkle in her eye, and there she is playing April Fool's Day tricks on a second grader. We also had I had a sister in the fourth grade, a brother in the fifth grade, another one in the seventh grade. Anyway, it was pretty funny, and that was April Fool's Day, 1957. I'm wondering if you have a favorite April Fool's Day joke you've played over the years. I have had several classic ones. I just got off the phone earlier tonight, just before the show, in fact, with my younger son, Joel. And while he didn't think it was funny at the time, I still talk about this one. I took his favorite cereal box and I changed the bag out and put the dog's dog food in the bag for that. So he's half asleep in the morning and he goes to pour the cereal into the cereal bowl, and out comes Coco's dog food. And, he obviously didn't get tricked into eating it. It woke him up that morning, and he had to admit in later years that it was reasonably funny. The old kinds of classics are putting salt in the sugar bowl, those kinds of things, right? And then people put the salt on their cereal in the morning, that kind of thing. I probably did that years and years ago, but it's not what I consider one of my classics because I didn't invent that one. Two of my next best ones were taking black electrical tape and wrapping it around the spray hose on the kitchen sink. If you remember those old style spray hoses, they were black. So by using black electrical tape to tape down the handle, as soon as you turn on the kitchen sink water, the sprayer starts spraying, and you just point it towards the person at the sink, and it gets them wet. The funny thing was, I did it late at night, so the first person up in the morning would get it, and I went back to the sink two or three times and soaked myself a couple of times before I went to bed. But in the morning, first my wife got up and fell for it, and then she left like it was so it would get the kids. We got at least one of the kids, Valley Andy, and so that goes down as a classic in the household. And then the last one I played on my wife, Linda. We had a deposit to do, and for some reason, it must have been a tax return, I think. We had a check for $3,000, and it was $3,000 even, so I don't know if we sold a car or whatever happened, but we had a check to cash, and she asked me to make out the deposit slip because she was running behind that morning, and it was April 1st. So instead of April 1st, where in the date I wrote April Fool's Day, exclamation point, and I made out the deposit slip for $30,000. And I signed the check. And so she goes and submits it to the clerk, and the clerk looks at the $30,000 deposit slip and says, "Excuse me, ma'am, these numbers don't add up." And she says, "What's the problem?" And then she sees it, and then they both see that it's marked April Fool's Day. So she always thought that was a pretty good one, too. She was a good sport about it, because every year I'd play some April Fool's Day joke on her or the boys, and she was always a good sport about it. So tomorrow's April Fool's Day, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. I usually go in and tell my class there's a quiz or something, and have them have a minor heart attack before I remind them it's April 1st. So maybe I'll do that to them tomorrow. But anyway, today is April 1st. And this is the day that Google announced that it would introduce the free email service called Gmail, which I don't use. I have some friends and students that use it. I don't recommend it. In fact, I disrecommend it, if that's a word. Also, that was 2004. Also in 2004 on this date, March 31st, Air America launched its first five radio stations. What a huge success story that is. They aren't smart enough to put me on the air yet. But eventually they will give in and put a moderate liberal on the air instead of someone who is a knee-jerk liberal. I'm just a jerk liberal. It's not my knee. It's not nothing else. And that's all we have to go over for today, because we need to move on to what's happening. And as you know, if you are a regular listener, we always start easy. We will, I'm sure, before it's over, get to the election. We'll get to Iraq, and a few other international and national issues. But let's start with why this is my favorite time of year. So, first of all, in the world of nature, today is the peak day for cherry blossoms. There's always a week in the middle of the cherry blossom season that is considered the peak week. And you can keep track of this by watching the Washington Post or the Washington Times. And today is the middle of the peak week. So the cherry blossoms are at their peak. And what they actually have a definition for peak, and it's that the trees have 70% of their blossoms out. And blossoms last a few days. Of course, we had a little rain today, so it kills the blossoms a little earlier. But it's the peak of the cherry blossom season. That's reason number one why I love this time of year. Reason number two is it's the start of the baseball season. And it's not just any season. Usually opening day is on Monday, the day after the Final Four is set in basketball. But opening day actually happened this year in Japan a few days ago. A couple of teams played in Japan. But last night, the Washington Nationals opened their season in their new ballpark. And not only did they open in a new ballpark that is a great design and a friendly place, in the old-style ballparks that they're bringing back, as opposed to the cement monstrosities, the multi-purpose stadia they built in the 60s to take care of both football and baseball, these newer parks are smaller. This seats seats less than 40,000, and fan-friendly. In addition to opening the ballpark yesterday, the Nationals won it on a game-ending home run in the bottom of the ninth. They won it 3-2 over Atlanta, the Atlanta Braves, one of the perennial strongest teams in the country. So all in all, it's a pretty dang successful opening day, except that you can't really call it opening day because they held the opening day at night. This was a night game held live on ESPN. And I suppose they wanted to wait till the NCAA basketball was over, in part. But also, they get bigger TV audience in the evening. I just think it's a crime to have opening day at night. You start a new game in a new stadium, and you make the people come at night. Plus, the temperature last night was quite cool. You want April games during the day. I used to have season tickets at Shea Stadium, and I have been to games in April in a lot of different ballparks. And unless you're down south, it is very, very cool at night. So not a great idea. The people are all bundled up. You can see them in the stands. Not a great idea to hold it at night. But otherwise, the Nationals' new park is off to a flying start, and things are looking pretty good. Now, let's talk the third reason why I love this time of year. And I probably should put this reason first, frankly, because it's my biggest reason of the year. It's bigger for me than opening day. In baseball, I don't follow baseball as close anymore as I used to. I hardly follow it day-to-day at all. I look at the standings, but I don't follow the players and read box scores the way I used to when I was a younger man and spent my time more foolishly. But I do still follow NCAA basketball. So Yesterday, there were two games to decide the final four. And Saturday, there were two games to decide the final four. So, what's interesting about this, and I'll keep this short for those of you who aren't sports fans, but what's interesting is for the first time in history, all four of the number one seeds have made it to the final four. In each region, there's one team seeded number one, one team seeded number two, et cetera, down through 16. And it's rare that the number one seeds, three number one seeds get to the final four. Usually there are people that get bumped off because the competition's pretty even. But this year, there are four teams that are clearly the class of the field. And three of them won easily. Okay, on Saturday, UCLA beat Xavier pretty easily. They ended up winning by 19 points. Xavier was the number three seed, and UCLA is one of the best teams in the field. They are in the Final Four for the third year in a row. That is really impressive. That doesn't happen very often. Also, North Carolina beat Louisville by 10 points. Now, North Carolina is the number one team in the country, maybe the best team in the country, but I got to tell you, I'm pulling for Memphis at this point, and I believe Memphis is a better team after watching them. But North Carolina is pretty tough, and they've got they've been here many times before. But Louisville looked really good in the game before this. They were dominant. They played well against North Carolina. They gave North Carolina everything they could handle, and they could not stay close to North Carolina. They ended up losing by 10 points. And Louisville, also a number three seed, is a great team under Rick Pitino. And, I mean, if it was them against Xavier, another number three seed, I think Louisville would have dominated Xavier. So North Carolina was impressive. Then on Sunday, Memphis won by 18 points over Texas. And Texas was a team that was highly rated. They're a number two seed. And Memphis dominated Texas. The fourth number one was the last game and the best game, because those first three games were not very close. The Louisville kept it sort of close into the second half, but the other games weren't in doubt. Kansas beat Davidson by 2 points. Now, Kansas is, again, one of the class teams of this tournament. They deserve to be there. They deserve a number one seed. They may not be as good as North Carolina or Memphis, and it remains to be seen if they're as good as UCLA. But Kansas only beat Davidson by 2 points. And while the other teams were each playing either a three seed or a two seed, Davidson was a number 10 seed. But they played with so much heart, and they looked so good that they gave Kansas everything they could handle. It really is remarkable that the only game that was close was the game involving the number 10 seed, because I expected if there were any blowouts, it was going to be Davidson getting blown out. But Stephen Curry, the sophomore for Davidson, who's been averaging 34 points a game, he only got 25 yesterday, but he's been averaging 34 in the tournament, was just amazing again. Again, the ending is hard to explain, hard to understand. They had like 14 seconds, and they didn't get off a good shot. They took a, I don't know, 25-foot jumper, and it wasn't even Curry that took the shot. I said this the other night after, or maybe it was last week's show, after another team that only had four or five seconds had passed it into their guard. He dribbles the length of the floor and takes a 35-footer. Whatever happened to passing the ball down the court? When you know you've only got 5 seconds, don't, or 4 seconds, or three, don't dribble the length of the floor, but they always do it. Why not plan an inbounds pass to your big man near half court, get him free, have him wheel and hit your guard running down the court, and you've got the ball down the court in a second and a half or 2 seconds, and he's got two more seconds to take a shot. Anyway, without going too far into it, I thought they mismanaged the end of the game. In any case, the Final Four is now set. It's all four number one seeds. These should be great games. They take place Saturday evening, and UCLA plays Memphis, and I think Memphis will win that game, and North Carolina plays Kansas. I expect North Carolina to win that game, and Monday night, my show will be pre-recorded next week because I will be headed home after I put it on to watch the finals of the NCAA tournament. So enough about the NCAA. Let's move on to a couple of other items that are in the news. A friend of mine was telling me that they were just showing some political ads in his class. This is a mass communication class at George Mason. And he was showing the old political ads, the old Reagan ads, It's Morning in America. And I said, boy, that's interesting, because Hal Rainey just died the end of last week. So Hal Rainey's the guy who created those ads for Ronald Reagan's campaign. He also did the series of Bartles and James ads, and he passed away. Also, this is really weird. Tomorrow is April Fool's Day, but there was a full-page ad in today's paper, actually yesterday's paper, announcing that Giant Food Stores, the number one grocer in the Washington area and elsewhere, other areas around the country, get this, there's a giant ad, no pun intended, I guess, our stores will be closed on Tuesday, April 1st, from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. So a grocery chain that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is going to close midday from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on April Fool's Day, right? And this will allow their associates, you know, if you work for a company nowadays, you're all associates. So it allows their associates to attend union contract ratification votes. And the pharmacies and banks will remain open, but they are closing Giant so everybody can vote within the union. I just think it's hilarious that they're doing it on April 1st. That's just, it's like a bad joke, you know. You may know about this, but Starbucks closed for a few hours recently. And I forget what the story was behind that, but nobody could believe it. How could Starbucks be closed? This was a midday kind of a thing. Anyway, let's see. Oh, a weird story in the news that you might have heard. There's a refugee from Iraq, Saman Karim Ahmad, who's 38 years old, lost his family when Saddam Hussein attacked with chemical weapons in the 80s. And for the last several years, he's been helping the U.S. Marines. He served as a translator in Fallujah when we had all that heavy fighting back in, I guess it was 2004. And he was given a visa given to translators and applied for asylum. He instructs the Marines that are at Quantico that are headed for Iraq. He teaches them Arabic. And it was reported last week that his application for permanent residence in the U.S. was denied by the Citizen and Immigration Services. Basically, he would be killed if he went back to Iraq by somebody, the people that don't like the Americans. And he's been accused of being part of the Kurdish Democratic Party, which the Immigration Services officially has deemed a terrorist organization because it fought against the Iraqi government. But it fought against the Iraqi government when Saddam was there. This is just the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Now, I'm sure now that it's getting news, it'll get sorted out. But I have to tell you, if this was a Democratic administration pulling this up, do you know how much the talk radio hosts would be all over this stuff? There was another example of that. The Pentagon, or the military, shipped missile fuses by mistake. The Defense Department, I guess, is the way to say it. Shipped missile fuses for nuclear weapons to Taiwan back in 2006. Instead of sending them packages of helicopter batteries, they sent them these missile components. And it's just come to light now. But these are the kinds of things that the only reason I'm glad we have a Republican administration is when these kinds of things go wrong. I mean, these kinds of mistakes get made at the Pentagon, whether we got Republicans or Democrats. But the right-wing talk show hosts jump all over this stuff and blame the president when these kinds of things happen, if he's a Democrat. If he's a Republican, they keep their traps shut. So these are the kinds of mistakes that just kind of happen. But once Barack Obama is president, you can bet that they will jump on every one of these little things in the same way they blamed Clinton for everything similar that happened during the 90s. And let's see. There is a little bit more news here. There is a little bit more evidence of global warming. A chunk of Antarctic ice, 7 times the size of Manhattan Island, collapsed and is putting a larger chunk at stake. And this chunk that started breaking off at the end of February broke off of what is known as the Wilkins Ice Shelf. It's been there for approximately 1,500 years. So these kinds of things happen occasionally, but collapses that are this large are unusual. And they're happening more frequently because of global warming. At least that's what scientists predict and believe. Now, I'm listening to right-wing talk today, and I have to say, I can't even tell you who it was. It was a guest host whose name I didn't know, but whose Wedowick I recognized. And he was filling in for, Gallagher, I guess is the guy's name. Not the Gallagher, the comedian. I can't think of who the guy is. But basically, he was sitting there saying that, it was just hard to believe. I'm flipping the dial, but I stop and listen for a minute. And he said, of course, the reason Al Gore has this, all these people are joining Al Gore in this new initiative. He's got a bipartisan initiative where ads are being cut by Al Sharpton sitting down with Pat Robertson and Hillary Clinton sitting down with, Newt Gingrich, maybe it was. And both saying, we agree on this issue. We need to take action on climate change. This right-wing talk show host is holding forth, as they all do, about the hoax of global warming. I don't think he used the word hoax, but he basically said, the problem with these people is they're not paying attention to the science. We pay attention to the science on global warming here, and so we know how it goes. No, he's not paying attention to the science on global warming. Is he nuts? You have to ignore the science on global warming to claim that there's nothing to it, that it's the man-made, that global warming is not man-made or whatever, right? There are thousands of studies now in the records over the last 20 to 30 years, and the preponderance of evidence and the vast majority of scientists, 99.9% of scientists who have credentials in these areas that are relevant, agree that man is causing some of the increase in temperature and that we could do something about it if we took action. And yet, there's this campaign on the right started by the oil companies and the organizations they fund to claim that there's debate about global warming. Sean Hannity's bought into it. A bunch of people have bought into it. And I listen to my conservative friends, and they're picking up on these. They aren't even Republican talking points. I guess they're conservative talking points. But whatever happened to trusting the experts? I thought that's what conservatives did. They like to think they're skeptical, but let's face it, you and I don't read these journals articles. The thousands of articles out there that our scientists have mastered and reference in their publications, they're not articles that we read. We don't understand the science on global warming. We can understand the politics, and that's about it. But I will tell you this, every time we go to the literature, if you were to look up the studies, the people that Sean Hannity cites on his website, the people that Glenn Beck has on his TV show that claim to debunk the global warming literature, they don't publish in the scientific literature. They publish books. There's no peer review. They don't go through editors that are tough on them. They can write whatever they want. And so they write drivel. And they've got about 20-25% of the company believing in the drivel. At some point, this crap has to stop. I'm sorry. It just has to. Anyway, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, the Andy Finn Show will take up a couple more general issues, including three people in the news. Do you know what Cat Stevens, Jimi Hendrix, and Bruce Springsteen have in common on March 31st?